Good morning, and welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and oh, we have got an hour filled with magic, and this is going to be Disney magic. My guest today is Charles Ridgway, and his wonderful, wonderful book is Spinning Disney's World, Memories of a Magic Kingdom Press Agent. So if you're a fan of Disney, as I am, this is going to be so much fun. Charles Ridgway, welcome.
Thank you very much.
To the show. It is just so delightful. I can't tell you how excited I was when I got your book and I read it, and it was everything I expected it to be and even more. I just loved every bit of it.
Now, well, I had great fun writing it because I had great fun living it, I guess. All of my memories are good ones, I must say.
Well, and not too many people can say that. Not at all. And there's just so much wonderful information you give. Now, you've got a little bit of a background we'll go into. You served in World War II. You wrote for newspapers in L.A. and Orange County, California.
Well, actually, I wrote for, started out in radio as a radio news reporter in Illinois and in Erie, Pennsylvania for about 5 years, then went sort of back to newspaper because my dad was a newspaper man, worked for the Erie Dispatch, and then moved to California. Worked on the Los Angeles Mirror News and in the Long Beach Press-Telegram, which covered both Orange and L.A. County.
Hey, you're a fellow broadcaster.
You bet. Well, I decided my voice wasn't going to be another Walter Cronkite, so I better get back to writing.
Oh, my goodness. Now, you had a 40-year career with Disney and the Disney Parks. In your wildest dreams, you would never have imagined. I mean, that was something in your book I found so interesting. This wasn't something you went out hunting down. Tell us how you were hired by Walt Disney. I just loved that story.
Well, I've been working on the Long Beach Press-Telegram for about a year, and prior to that on the L.A. Mirror News. I had covered Disneyland actually since before the opening. My first story out there was one I dreamed up because I thought this was going to be the most unusual place I ever saw. And I kept trying to get my city editor to let me write about it, and he kept putting me off and hoping it would be a little farther along. Finally, in April of 1955, I borrowed a neighbor kid, a six-year-old boy who was a real pistol, and we took him out to the park, and I met my photographer out there, and we went around and took pictures of David Potthast, a little six-year-old first grader. And we posed him in front of the castle, which was only about half done, and the scaffolding was still up on it and whatnot. He had a funny hat and boots on. And we took him over and had him fish off the bridge in front of Frontierland. The walls were only about half done, and there was no water in the river. Took him on a stagecoach ride with no horses. So we had a good time, and at the end of the day, I saw some flash bulbs lying around. I said, somebody's been here ahead of us. And I called in the office and said, we better run this story tomorrow. Somebody's going to be us. Oh, you know, tomorrow's paper's full. Wait and write it Monday when you come in. This was on a Friday. So I put it off then. And when I got in on Monday morning, of course, there was a big full-page spread of pictures in our competition, the Los Angeles Examiner. But David Potthast went to school that day, and his mother got a call that afternoon from the teacher who said, you better come in for a consultation. And when she got there, she said, you know, we encourage the kids to have a lot of imagination, but David came to school today with this wild tale about going to Disneyland, and he wouldn't admit he was lying. And I thought that was really a good start for the whole thing. And 3 months later, of course, the opening of Disneyland was, I thought, a wonderful day, and yet it turned out, as far as Disney publicity was concerned, to be Black Sunday, because everything seemed to go wrong. They had invited the coast of Hollywood, press, and everybody in the area who was really celebrities to come out for the day, a special preview, not open to the public, and they invited, they thought, 15,000 guests. Well, they wound up with 30,000 guests there, which means that was at least twice as many people as they could possibly handle. I was the only reporter on the Mirror, on the any of the metropolitan papers in L.A. who lived in Orange County at the time. We had moved down there. Anaheim was a nice little sleepy town of 19,000 people. We lived way down to the edge of town. And so we were pretty close, and I decided to go over early. We were not due until noon, but my wife and I got all dressed up. She had a new dress with matching shoes. And we got there at 9 o'clock in the morning, just in time to see Walt telling a painter he'd forgotten a place on the ceiling of the train station at the head of Main Street. And we wandered in and got some press material, and Greta and I wandered down the street and looked around. There weren't any rides starting at that point. And we went down to the castle, and Walt was rehearsing his commercials, and he was so nervous I didn't dare go ask him any questions. So we had an interesting time, at least for a couple hours, and then the crowd began to arrive, and I told Greta, we better go have lunch, because that crowd's going to really get tight. And we got the Red Wagon in and had a great prime rib dinner, and Debbie Reynolds and Eddie Fisher and other celebrities were all around us, and it was an exciting time even for someone who had been a reporter in Hollywood for some time.
Well, one of the things that you brought out is that Walt Disney was a man, he was such a visionary. He was just a phenomenal visionary. And he would pick his key people, just like he picked you. You were in an office doing something, and he talked to you, and you said, yeah, come on in, or whatever. I mean, it was nothing that was, hello, how are you? I'm Walt Disney, and yada, yada, yada. He didn't do that. He was
not a pompous person by any stretch of the imagination. He was a hardworking, he was dedicated, he was a true genius, because he spotted every little detail of when he was putting together an attraction, as I watched him do on a number of occasions. He would spot things that nobody else would notice. And some of this, one of the Imagineers would say, well, you know, nobody will ever see that. It's clear up on top of the building, Walt said. They said, they'll never miss it. So Walt said, well, I will. And So that was the end of the discussion. And so all those little details that go to make up the whole are what makes, what made Disneyland immediately appealing, charming, different. And in fact, it was so different that Eddie Beck, who was my boss when I went to work there 8 years later, told Walt, you know, we can't plant this like we used to the movies. We can't take stories and pictures out and plant them with the papers. Walt said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, it's just too fantastic. Nobody will believe it.
Mm-hmm.
So Walt said, well, what are you going to do? So Eddie said, well, we're going to get them to come and see it for themselves, and then we won't have anything to do. And that was the way it worked, and it was really the policy that we followed and still do follow. And getting the news media, the opinion leaders, and so forth, to come and see it for themselves and to have fun with it, too.
Mm-hmm. He had an entirely different approach about so many things. For those of you who have just tuned in, my guest today is Charles Ridgway. He was the press agent for the Magic Kingdom. The title of his book is Spinning Disney's World. Now, what makes this book, in my view, so special is not only does he give information about what he experienced as a press agent and the various things that they did, one of them which he just mentioned, but he also talks about the business side, but he talks about the young people and so many other things in here. I think for a business person, it makes for a marvelous read. For a family, it's fascinating reading about a place that just about every child, adult child or child, wants to go to. You have a quote here on the plaque that was put up on July 17th, 1955, and I'm going to quote it right from your book. To all who come to this happy place, welcome. Disneyland is your land. Here age relives fond memories of the past, and here youth may savor the challenge and promise of the future. Disneyland is dedicated to the ideals, the dreams, and the hard facts which have created America, with the hope that it will be a source of joy and inspiration to the world. Those words are so powerful. And when I read that, it really touched me, because I thought, this is a man who was determined to make the world a better place. And he brought in tens of thousands of people to be able to accomplish this from all over the world.
Well, you know, Donna, when Walt said those words at the dedication on July 17th, 1955, it was there was a smile in a voice, a hope in his voice that left everybody that was there almost with tears in their eyes because it was so warm and so genuine. And he carried it out in so many ways. You were talking about the people who work there, and we call them cast members because Walt always felt that these were every one of them, whether he was sweeping streets or fixing lights or doing publicity, was a part of a show, and they were performers on stage at a vast outdoor stage, unlike anything that had ever happened before. And he began a whole program to instill in them the idea that the people were coming here were not customers, they were guests. Our role was as hosts and hostesses, not as workers or employees. And that whole atmosphere created a kind of a atmosphere of pixie dust that made everybody want to go and help people have a good time. And that was what has really carried forward in today. And I think the most amazing thing about Walt Disney is that more than 40 years after his death, that influence is still as strong, perhaps stronger than ever, among people who never even knew Walt.
I have to share something with you. I was preparing, had reviewed your book, and I was in my dentist's office 2 days ago. And we were having this conversation. They wanted to know what kind of people were coming up for interviews, and I told them I was going to have you on the air, and we started talking about Disneyland. And my dentist said, oh, my goodness, you know, that has to be one of the cleanest places I've ever been in. And when I was in, I told her about how when the situation for keeping things clean and in order, and you went through your bumps and grinds trying to get everything orderly. But Disneyland, Disney World, Epcot is known for its cleanliness. It's known for its helpfulness. The assistant that was working with the dentist, she said, oh, when I was there, my daughter had a fall, and someone was right there, and we got a Band-Aid. And she said, it was just incredible. You feel so safe there. You feel everything is in such good order. And it took quite a while for that to happen. But you have a story in your book was that there was such a strict rule about keeping things clean and doing it overnight when nobody was there wasn't working. So they put two-thirds of their cleanup cast to work keeping things picked up during the day. And there was this lady that was being followed around by a guy that had his little broom and a dustpan. And she was carrying a dirty paper cup, and finally she got disgusted and said, young man, if you don't stop following me to that pan, I'm going to throw my cup in it. And I just laughed.
Well, I think that really happened. I'm sure it probably happened more than once. One of the keys, of course, to keeping making a place clean is keeping it clean. If you let trash collect, immediately you begin to get piles of trash. We discovered that when we had parades, for instance, people would sit on the curbside or stand mm-hmm. around and have Cokes and so forth. And so when they would leave, there would be this pile of trash. And if you left it there, it will grow and grow during the day. So we brought in gasoline-driven vacuum cleaners, and immediately when 2 minutes after that parade goes down the street, it's all swept up and clean again. Once in a while, we had problems like in the Jungle Cruise where they were in a queue line that went back and forth and forth for several minutes waiting for the ride, and they would mm-hmm. their trash would collect. And during the day, it was very difficult. Those aisleways were so narrow, it was very difficult to get in during the day and clean them out, and it was always a kind of a thorn on our side.
Well, I know that you came up with the concept of really making trash cans very attractive.
Yeah, that was a part of it, too, putting them handy and where people will notice them, and yet you'll not see a sign anywhere that says, please throw the trash in the container. I see people, individuals, who will see a piece of trash on the street and walk clear across and take it, pick it up, and put it in a trash container because they just don't want to see it sitting there.
Absolutely. It's just...
And our own executives from the top down, including Walt, when they walked around the park looking around and inspecting and so forth, and just wandering through the park, with guests or whatnot, will stoop down and pick up a piece of trash if they saw it.
Disney was the first with audio animatronics, and that was such a phenomenal leap forward. I mean, look at what we have today.
Well,
and they were on the forefront of that. Tell us how that happened.
Absolutely. Well, actually, the first show that I started to work on when I went there in 1963. Well, several months before it opened, was called The Enchanted Tiki Room. And it was made up of a show where the performers all were kind of overhead. They were birds and flowers and tiki gods that all came to life. And to make that all work, Walt had to figure out a way to make those, to coordinate the sound, the movement, the lighting, everything that happened. And at first he started trying to do it on motion picture film, using a soundtrack to put all the electronic cues, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got interested in the space program, got to know Wernher von Braun and a number of people, and he was quite close to a number of key people in industry, and he came across a 2-inch tape recorder that was being used by the space program in space telemetry, and he was able to acquire one and put it into the below the ground under the tiki room, and then everything could be programmed on that tape, and the lights would turn on, the voices would come out, everything would happen on cue. All they had one push of the button, and the show was on and going. And they used that same system, expanded and changed a lot, because later on they did the programming on with a lot more ease on computers to do all kinds of things. Pirates of the Caribbean is one of my favorites, and they mm-hmm. we were working on that and almost had it done when Walt died in 1966.
I love your story about the Imagineers working at night and how you were wanting to do Abraham Lincoln and this wonderful, wonderful, wonderful animatronics. And it was, the figures would work very well while Imagineers were programming it at night, but when it was turned on during the day, it would go through all kinds of unprogrammed wild motions. I'm quoting from your book. Some call it spastic, and occasionally it would suddenly wake up and scare the janitorial staff.
Well, there were some very funny things, but I tell you, at the time, it was the most embarrassing moment that Walt ever had, I think, because it came, they thought they had it all fixed, that everything was running just fine, and they worked on the night before, and they were to have a huge press conference the next day, and the governor of Illinois, Adlai Stevenson, there were people from the Chicago Tribune and a lot of other people who had been critical of the whole thing because the state was spending a lot of money on this attraction, and they weren't sure that this was going to be the kind of thing that they wanted to have happen to Mr. Lincoln. And so they had this press conference scheduled one morning at 10 o'clock, and Walt had to get up and announce, "Sorry, fellas, but we can't show it to you. It just isn't ready." And, of course, the problem they discovered, and it took them a couple more weeks to really figure out what was going on, during the night when they were programming, is when the lights at Shea Field were on, Shea Stadium,
mm-hmm.
And they, when during the daytime, when those lights were off, why the voltage would come up to a little bit, but just enough to spoil all this delicate electronic staging that had been done in the figure. Of course, Mr. Lincoln became one of the four shows that Walt did for the fair, and all of them were hugely successful,
mm-hmm.
and all of them were brought back to the parks in one fashion or another. And when they took Mr. Lincoln back to Disneyland, I know I was there when it for the opening day, and following the first performance, some woman in the audience came around back and bearded one of the technicians and just insisted she had to go back and talk to this actor that had done that because she thought he was the greatest actor she ever saw. Turned out, of course, it's all audio animatronic. It's a name that Disney invented and his Imagineers have perfected. And of course, they're still working on the cutting edge of technologies. They're using high-definition television now to produce images that are so real that you can't believe they aren't real.
Mm-hmm.
There's a new show called Turtle Talk at Epcot, which appears to be your audience is in a theater looking through a plate glass or a heavy glass window into a huge aquarium, and where a big turtle from the Nemo film comes up to the screen and starts talking to the audience and carrying on a conversation. And there's a mic in the audience so they can talk back and forth. And you would swear it's a live turtle and that's a real fish tank, but it isn't. And I'm not going to tell you any more secrets about it, but it is an amazing show, and we're going to be using that in several other ways as time goes along.
You have so many fabulous details in your book. Of course, you lived part of the Disney experience and the dream, and you knew so many wonderful people that were involved in the development of it, people that would do things and challenges were presented to them. They were problem solvers. But I think one of my fun facts that I really enjoyed was about Walt's plane, and it was called the Mouse. And that when they landed the plane at Herndon Field, they were announced it as Mickey Mouse 234 approaching, and then after it landed, they'd say the rat is on the ramp. And I love that. I just thought that was such fun.
We enjoyed it, too. It wasn't anything that we invented, but it seemed very logical. As a matter of fact, I think those call letters, MM234, became known by every air coordinator across the country over the several years that it flew. Walt bought it to take his Imagineers back and forth from the West Coast to the New York Fair in 1963 and 4 when it was being built. And then when he got through with it, he let us have it to use for bringing press groups to Disneyland for the 10th anniversary, which, of course, occurred at the beginning of the end of 1964 and beginning of 1965.
Walt Disney had an attitude about his Disneyland, his Disney World, Epcot. Of course, Disneyland is in its various forms throughout the world. Hong Kong is going to be opening up pretty soon.
Hong Kong is already open.
Oh, it's already open?
Yeah, I worked on the press book there about a little over a year ago.
And oh, my goodness.
Doing reasonably well. They have some challenges to face there because the Chinese have a tendency to take their holidays all at one time, so they have this mass of people to send on them during the holiday periods, and then during the lighter periods, the attendance is not as good as they would expect.
He had an attitude about his parks. He felt that people were to be attracted because there was a story to be told, and everything he put together, and I couldn't agree with him more. And that was his attitude then, it's the attitude today, and I think that is so important. Again, his vision and his concept, what he wanted in Disneyland, the fact that when he saw his daughter, when he took her to an amusement park, it disgusted him. It disgusted him because it was dirty, it was not a pleasant place, it didn't feel safe, and he wanted something so special.
Well, not only that, but it wasn't entertaining. The kids were having some fun, but
mm-hmm.
Walt would sit on a bench and watch them and be bored to tears.
Mm-hmm.
It was nice to watch them have fun. So he wanted a place the whole family could have fun together, and I think you find that Disneyland and Disney World and the one in Paris, of course, are places where you can go with a family of children of every age, from
mm-hmm.
from 6 to 60 or 70 or 80, and everybody is having fun together. It's not, and they're much, for most part, they're doing the same thing. Now, there are a few of the high-speed thrill things that people, when they get to my age, begin to shy away from somewhat, but they can enjoy having the other people go and see and experience that. But every one of those attractions, the thrill ride is not the main point. The point is the story. And so
mm-hmm.
one of the most recent ones is the Mount Everest attraction or roller coaster type of a thrill, if you will, in the Disney's Animal Kingdom, which tells the story of Mount Everest and the abominable snowman and so forth. And so you get treated to a story and not just riding for a point of riding, but riding to discover, to have an experience.
Also, something that when I learned this a number of years ago, it just meant a great deal to me. There are two colleges, one for the West Coast, and maybe it's expanded since I learned of this, on the West Coast and one on the East Coast, for students that would like to become educated. And there's this Disney College for training, and the young people involved, the courtesy, the attitude. I mean, there's just all of this wonderful opportunity for young people, and you have, what, 55,000 employees?
About 59,000 in Disneyland, or Disney World at the peak now. You see, we not only have the Magic Kingdom, which most people are pretty familiar with, but millions now have become familiar with Epcot, Disney's Animal Kingdom, Disney MGM Studio, which I think is a marvelous representation of the Hollywood dream. And we have a new show over there, which I like very much, called Nemo, based on the film. It's a musical comedy stage presentation using the kind of puppets that were so successful with The Lion King in New York.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you something. I know we've only got a few minutes left here. You've got to tell your story about the ducks.
Okay.
I love that. That really? Was on the 15th anniversary, I believe.
The 50th anniversary of Donald Duck. So that went. He was developed in the early 1930s, and this was in the 1980s. A year ahead of time, we were planning what we were going to do. We always, plan well ahead. I said, wouldn't it be fun if we could get 50 ducks to follow Donald down the street, 50 big old white ducks? And somebody said, well, can you do that? And I said, well, we'll see. So we called, and they said, well, yes, but you have to have the ducks bond with the character from the time they're born. So we sent Donald down to Miami to the hatchery so he could be there when those little yellow fur balls came out of the eggs. And then we brought him up and put him out in the Fort Wilderness, and every morning he would go out with some lettuce and get him to follow him around, so they got used to it. And then later on we moved him over to a little pen behind my office in City Hall where we could keep an eye on him, and every morning Donald could take him out on Main Street and get him used to the park. And then we decided, well, if we're going to a party, they ought to have party hats on. So we got some little 3-inch cones, paper mache cones, that we pasted on the top of their feather head. And had a ribbon around their neck with their name on it. We named it after Disney characters, so there was Dopey Duck and Donald Duck and Snow White Duck and so forth. And then we put the hats on. The trouble was, when you put the hat on one, all the rest of them got jealous and attacked him. So we solved that by putting a divider down the middle of the pen. We'd put the hat on one duck, put him over on the other side, put a hat on the next, and so on. As long as the rest of them had hats on, they were fine. But if only one or two, why, it was chaos. They marched, they marched down Main Street before the parade, and then during the parade, throughout the summer, we put them on a float that had a little picket fence around it, and as they went down the street, they naturally pant when they're a little bit hot, and their mouths would open and close, and it looked like they were singing along with the quack quack music, and they were the hit of the show.
Well, who would have ever thought that you could get 50 ducks to, do this? I mean, it's just, the story is marvelous.
That may be my one and only great idea.
Well, I just think it's fabulous. It's absolutely wonderful. You bring a whole perspective of what goes on behind the scenes. There's information about the various changes in the executive positioning after Walt died, the things that Disney has gone through, the company has gone through. And it's just so insightful and informative. But I think what means more than anything else to me is that this is a man who had a dream, whose brother carried the dream forward, and many other people. And here you have, just in the one park, 59,000 employees, all of whom are extremely dedicated. And there's tens of thousands all over the world that are there. And he said that Disneyland will continue to grow as long as there is imagination left in the world. And you make a statement that you've known of no other man whose personality has continued to inspire so many for so many years.
That certainly is true.
It is just amazing. Now, I know my listeners would like to know how they could get your book, which, by the way, is titled Spinning Disney's World. Charles Ridgway is the author. He is the winner of the Disney Legends Award. There's just so much wonderful information in here. It will just light up your life in a very special way, and it's Memories of a Magic Kingdom press agent. You can go to the publisher's website if you'd like more information. It's intrepidtravel.com.
Intrepid Traveler. Yeah.
It's
also available now in most major bookstores.
Yes.
In this area down here, of course, I think they are fairly prominent displays. But all over the country, if they don't carry it in stock, they can get it within 2 or 3 days in Barnes and Noble and Borders and all the rest of them. And you can get it off Amazon.com. So it's readily available now. It's just really just out in the last 2 weeks, and I've been out doing some book signings in this area, and went on the Disney cruise last week down to St. Thomas and back, and did some lectures there, and had a chance to do more books.
Well, I'm just absolutely thrilled that we've been able to have you as a guest today, and I thank you so much, because I know that this book is going to just be so incredibly successful. It's such a joy to be able to meet someone like yourself who's been a part of it for a significant portion of its life, and wow, I just hope that you just have as much fun in the coming years as you have had in the past 40.
I hope so, too, and I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you so much for being my guest, Charles.
Hey, thank you very much.
Charles Ridgway is my guest. The book is Spinning Disney's World, Memories of a Magic Kingdom Press Agent. It is a five-star. It is just so full of so many wonderful stories, points of information that maybe you would never have imagined could possibly have been made available to you. So here it is, and it's a wonderful example of what I feel is one man's courage to be different and to be the individual. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. Don't you go away now. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Well, our telephone lines are now open, and I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here are our toll-free numbers, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Also from Canada, you can call in. Our toll-free number is 888-810-8322. That's 888-810-8322. We also have a direct line of 530-876-3222. Now, I want to let you know about my guest that's coming tomorrow, Susan Dean. We're going to be talking about online education. My goodness, in today's world, so many people are going back to school. And dependent on what your subject matter choice might be, then you might find online education is going to suit your purposes beautifully because it can be done according to your schedule. We don't live in an 8-to-5 world. We have people working all kinds of wacky hours. I know I'm one of them. And so consequently, if you want to go back to school and if you want to get a degree, this is something you should explore. So we're going to find out more about that tomorrow. And then next week, I told you we had a guest that we had to cancel on Monday coming up because they had an emergency. Actually, it's a physician, and he had to go and take care of some situations with patients. So we had to replace him. And so what we're going to be talking about on Monday is getting your M&Ms. Yeah, well, it's not the chocolate candy, folks. This is men and money. Mm-hmm. So you gals out there might be interested. Monique Chapman is going to be our guest on Monday. Then we're going to be talking with Deborah Dillard, Gift Giving by the Stars. And then on Wednesday, we're going to have an open mic day. We're going to have the whole hour devoted to miscellaneous things, so you're going to have an opportunity to call in during that hour at any time. Then Lawden Powers is going to be my guest. We're going to talk about the trouble with thinking. Perspective a little bit different than normal. And then, if healing is something you're fascinated with, Qigong is something we're going to be discussing. We're going to be talking to a Qigong master, Cheng Yi Lin. And this is a fabulous publication. So I really think we've got a dynamic week. And, oh, it's got so many other wonderful people. And for those of you up in Alaska, I am going to be coming up into both Fairbanks and Anchorage, Alaska. And so if you want to know when, et cetera, give me a call at my office. We're getting everything finalized right now, and I will be able to tell you those dates. But this was a last-minute decision. I thought I was going to be able to do it in May, and as it turns out, my whole schedule has gone really wacko with busyness. So we've had to move it up a little bit earlier than what we anticipated. But a lot of good people, a lot of good things. I think one of the greatest joys, and you'll hear me say this over and over again, in doing this program, in talking with the authors, in reading their materials, it's so important for you to be aware. There are so many good people in this world that are making a difference. And when we can recognize those good people, when we can bring to the forefront their efforts, their due diligence, and their information, you have a chance for making choices, whether it's regarding health, whether it's regarding money, whether it's regarding career, whatever. And so if you have any concepts or ideas or know of an author or some information that you feel is important, don't hesitate to email me. I'm always interested in it. And if you don't get a response from me right away, just know that I do have a wild and woolly schedule. So just give me an email, donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. Also, people ask me if they can get private appointments with me. Absolutely. All you have to do is call my office, 800-872-8852. And I wanted to share with you a comment that I came across that I thought, it's pretty good. It has to do with living in the present but preparing for tomorrow. Andre Agassi, who is a real estate developer and also was a tennis champion, made this statement. For me, the past 20 years have been practice for tomorrow. Someone who's successful in any area has figured out at least two things: how to get the most out of themselves, and that attention to detail matters. When I was talking with Charles Ridgway, and he mentioned Disney, Disney's attention to detail was phenomenal, and he would work with his artists. And you know what? What happened is that the people around him took such pride in their work that his standard of excellence they wanted to meet. And I think the attention to detail is important. And sometimes people will say, oh, you pay too much attention to detail. Well, maybe and maybe not. You know, it's those little things that make a difference, that extra touch. That's the difference from going to a hash house for breakfast and a fine restaurant for breakfast. You find the attention to detail. So that makes a difference, and that is a standard that if we pay attention to the details in our life as we're supposed to, then we have that standard of excellence that we set for ourselves. We're never going to be able to be absolutely perfect, but by golly, we sure can strive for that standard of excellence. And you know what? In today's world, a lot of people would say that's abnormal. It's not normal, and that's a shame because it should be something that we should expect of ourselves at all times. Donna Sebo, and just a little bit of thought here and there, a couple of items I'm going to share with you today, but if you'd like to call in and chat with me, hey, I'm available, 877-876-5227. Or from Canada, 888-810-8322. Also, our direct line of 530-876-3222. And if you've not done it before and you wonder what I'm talking about, if this is the first time you're listening to the show, all I need from you is your first name or your initial. And then I'm happy to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. And all you need to do is listen. And then after that, you can ask me a question about anything you like. Easter is coming up. That is a holiday so many people absolutely love and enjoy celebrating. And hey, any excuse for a delicious meal or for getting dressed up and doing something special is a good excuse to do. Well, one of the things that comes with holidays like Easter are the the idea of giving flowers, you know, if you're going over to mom's house or you're going to a friend's home, they're fixing dinner, or maybe just for yourself. Well, I came across some information about flowers and their colors. I'm going to talk about roses because roses are such a special flower, and I don't know of anybody, really, that I'm aware of, and I'm sure there are some that are, but I don't know of anybody that doesn't enjoy roses. And colors with roses really makes a difference. Of course, the red, red rose is something that has always indicated the symbol of love. And this symbol goes back to Greek times when Aphrodite, the goddess of love, rushed to comfort her injured beloved Adonis and scratched herself on the thorn of a white rose. And the blood stained the rose bright red. And since then, it has signified true love and romance. And then let's go to the color pink. Oh, and there's so many different beautiful shades of pink in roses. Well, pink roses represent grace, adoration, and even sweetness. And they also symbolize platonic love. They're the perfect rose for relatives. Now, every shade of pink stands for something different. Pale pink means gentleness and elegance. Medium pink means the recipient is fun to be around. And deep, rich, dark pink represents gratitude and appreciation. Now, white roses. Oh, they're so beautiful. Now, since medieval times, white roses have represented purity and innocence because they're untouched. In fact, in Christian Europe, the Virgin Mary was represented by a white rose, and legend has it that at one time all the roses in the world were white until they were stained with color. Orange. Wow, you don't see orange very often, but there are orange roses, and they indicate passion. While red roses symbolize love, orange ones signify desire. And with the joy of yellow and the romance of red, the bright orange has the appearance of fire, which represents burning passion. And oh, if you want to give yellow, that means it's a rose of friendship. Yellow means joy, friendship, and happiness, and is a great color to send a close friend, a neighbor, or even a co-worker. And they're so cheery when you have them around you. They just say, just by looking at the color of yellow, it stimulates endorphins and makes us feel warm and cheery, feeling similar to being with a good friend. Now, what's interesting about yellow roses, they used to symbolize jealousy and envy. It wasn't until the last century that they came to mean friendship. Well, I like what we symbolize with them now. I like that a great deal. And what about lavender? You don't see those too often, at least I haven't. But lavender is a special meaning. It means you're falling in love with someone. And lavender roses stand for a new and blossoming love. Love at first sight is a very strong representative of the lavender rose. And they're usually given at the very early stage of a romantic relationship. And because they are so rare, they mean the recipient is unique and one of a kind. Now, let's combine some colors. How about white and red roses say, we're united. Now, where does this come from? Why are they interpreted that way? Well, it dates all the way back to England's War of the Roses between the Yorks, whose symbol was a white rose, and the Lancasters, whose symbol was a red rose. When Henry VII ended the conflict, he created the Tudor rose, a combination of white and red, symbolically joining the true roses and the families together. And you know, in Scotland, if a white rose blooms in autumn, it means an early marriage will take place. Well, there you got it. There's some wonderful details about roses and their colors. But if you go around your neighborhoods, I don't know about where you live at this moment, but right here in the Pacific Northwest, hyacinths are coming up, the tulips are blooming, we've got daffodils, we've just got all this wonderful color. It's a real feast for the eyes when you go out walking, which we do every day, because we have these trees that are magnolia trees. I always call them tulip trees because they have these huge blooms on them. All of these colors. And I was told many years ago when I started studying metaphysics and started studying what colors meant, if you follow nature, if you watch nature, you can come to understand meanings of colors in a whole new way. because colors have their brightness, their various hues, and each of those colors and shades has a symbology of meaning. So nature is a wonderful way to study them. Well, we're going to be taking a break. When we come back, phone lines are going to be open. I'd be delighted to chat with you. Give me a buzz at 877-876-5227 for the U.S., for Canadians, 888-810-8322, or you can call me on 530-876-3222. Don't you go away now. We're coming right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right, Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-810-8322 or 530-876-3222. Don't forget, you can send me an email if you have a special recipe or a story you would like to share. And I want to thank those of you that have been sending me material. And I am trying to respond to my emails. We have quite a few of them. So I'll get to them as quickly as I can. If you don't hear back from me in a little while, then send me another email. I don't mind. Sometimes emails get lost in cyberspace, by the way. I received this wonderful, thoughtful, I'll say it's a poem, that was sent to me by Debbie. And she said, to realize the value of a sister, ask someone who doesn't have one. To realize the value of 10 years, ask a newly divorced couple. To realize the value of 4 years, ask a graduate. To realize the value of 1 year, ask a student who has failed a final exam. To realize the value of 9 months, ask a mother who gave birth to a stillborn. To realize the value of 1 month, ask a mother who has given birth to a premature baby. To realize the value of 1 week, ask an editor of a weekly newspaper. To realize the value of 1 minute, ask a person who has missed the train, bus, or plane. To realize the value of 1 second, ask a person who has survived an accident. Time waits for no one. Treasure every moment you have. You will treasure it even more when you can share it with someone special. To realize the value of a friend or family member, lose one. The origin of this letter is unknown, but it brings good luck to everyone who passes it on. So I'm passing it on. I think really to be able to learn how to live in the moment right here, right now, with where you are, no matter what the circumstances are, to just be present with where you are, is so very significant. That is not an easy thing to do because we've got so many different things that occupy our minds. But when we can do that, we have that moment where we can center ourselves, where we can appreciate where we are and what we're doing. We can also appreciate the fact that we have options and choices. It can make a difference. A second can make a difference. A minute, an hour. It depends on the circumstances, but it does make a difference. I wanted to share a little bit of information with you. Women are really making changes in the world, and those of you who are in business really should pay attention about marketing to women. That was something that a few years ago people didn't want to pay too much attention to. They didn't feel that the female consumer really was paying too much attention to what went on. So often, and not unlike car dealers, they would say, oh, well, we're going to advertise to the guys. Well, finally, someone decided to do some evaluations, and over the past few years, they have realized, oops, they made a mistake. I had to chuckle because I was talking with someone who was in the automobile sales positioning, and they said, it is amazing to me how, after all the research that has been done regarding the female as a consumer and our needing to listen to the female consumer, how much it is ignored when they come to working with vehicles. So they said one day somebody's going to wake up and pay attention, and those that do are going to be very happy, happy campers, and they're going to hear their cash registers go ka-ching quite frequently. Well, today the buzz in the business world, they now are saying, hey, pay attention to the ladies. And you need to be able to reach out to female consumers in a way that's both authentic and profitable. They say anyone who pays the slightest bit of attention to marketing news has absorbed a glut of statistics that prove that women are majority consumers. Here are some of the stats. Approximately 80 cents of every consumer dollar in the United States is either directly spent or influenced by a woman. In addition to the traditional female categories of spending, women are responsible for more than 50% of all do-it-yourself purchases, 50% for all do-it-yourself purchases, 51% of consumer electronics, 89% of bank accounts, and 80% of healthcare. Those are strong stats. The rate of women-owned business startups is growing at 3 times the rate of other startups in the U.S. Women are major business consumers. 86% of women entrepreneurs say they use the same products or services at home as they do in their businesses. And that is so very important. So if you want to understand and connect with the female consumer, you have to go beyond the typical paint it pink strategies. That's such a turnoff to me. Paint it pink. Why do they think women are airheads? We're not. We really like things that work. So in today's market, we are demanding acknowledgement as individual consumers rather than just being categorized just as a mass of women. We're saying, pay attention to this. Would you start talking to me about what matters to me? And I think that that is very, very important. They said, if you try marketing to women as a niche only, going to undermine your marketing efforts. The most successful campaigns are those that acknowledge women as the mainstream customer base. And what makes the strategy profitable is how well businesses understand the different types of individuals with whom they're trying to connect. And so it's important that you understand that women want to have a real sense of value. And that is something that women, when they're talking with each other, and they're making their evaluations, that's something we've always done. We don't hesitate, if we like something, to pass it along to everybody we know. We'll say, hey, we'll pick up the phone and say, oh my goodness, I found out about this cleaning product. It's absolutely awesome. Or, gee whiz, this stuff is terrible. It'll make your animals sick, your kids sick. You're not going to want to use it. Boom, be able to go dead. So those of you in business out there, and I know those ladies that are in business for themselves like myself, we really, really understand. We really, really do care. And we really do want the excellence. And we want the best for our families, for our animals, for our friends. And it's something that people need to pay attention to. So ladies, we need to speak up, stand strong, and believe me, they're starting to listen. It makes a difference. And if you don't like what's in vehicles, speak up about it, because they will eventually pay attention. Because remember the statistic of 89% of bank accounts? Mm-hmm. Hey, businesses, pay attention. The ladies have got it. Well, this is Donna Sebo. I know we are almost out of time. For those of you who are enjoying this weekend, this Easter holiday that is going to be coming up, or you're on Easter break, I know there's a lot of students out from school, I just hope that you have an absolutely fabulous, fabulous time. And it's so important just to remember, take time for yourself. Take time to enjoy the beauty of spring, because Easter always is a strong announcement of that. And just enjoy having the time to savor the moment and appreciate everything that's around you, your freedoms, the delightfulness of the people that you love, and the wonderful food you might be sharing with friends and family. Remember, you're very, very fortunate. Wherever you are, you're fortunate to live in a time where you have choice and you have opportunity. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Watch out for those bunnies. One got into my computer, so you better be prepared. They can sometimes be mischievous little imps, but most of them will end up being just chocolate. This is Donna Sebo. Wherever you are, have a fabulous, fabulous day, and we will be back with you tomorrow, and we're going to be talking about online education. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.